Hey, this is Hojo, and you're listening to me on Baseball and Barbecue with my two best friends, my new best friends, Jeff and Leonard. So y'all enjoy it, okay?
Studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York. This is episode number 236. I'm Jeff the Oku Cohen, along with Leonard Hollywood Aberman. We welcome you back to our show. Leo.
How are you, Jeff?
All right.
Excited 236. There's so much that I want to talk about. First, we got to tell you the guests. The guests are Jeremy Wayland, with our pal Doug Scheiding. Is really he's a cinematographer who loves to barbecue and who won a Traeger event. We're going to talk all about him and his cooking. Also, we've got Rich from Grilling with Rich. That was his first blog that he used to do. He was on a television show, Grilling, went to Memphis in May. We talk all about his career. And he also does the Nats report.
We talked about the Washington Nationals.
So we've got two great guests. And I want to tell you, I've got so much to talk about. That's the problem. Let's get right to the first order of business, okay? BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season. From MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet online. It is where the game starts.
And what are we starting with?
First, I got to tell you, I was using my Traeger this weekend.
Okay.
One of the things I'm very excited about, we know that Traeger has these new Louisville Slugger limited edition pellets, right? These maple flavored pellets.
Right.
I made some pork chops with them, but smoked some pork chops. Nice, thick cut pork chops. Really gave them a nice flavor. I use some Traeger rub. Don't ask me the kind. I forget. I'm not running downstairs to look, but I used a Traeger rub on it. I put it on the Traeger with those Louisville pellets. Really nice.
Yeah, so, but I want to know, did you use the Baseball BBQ tools?
Of course I use. What other tools do I use? Yes. Oh, okay. Yes, I did, Jeff. Yeah, you know what? If I didn't have them, I would have gone to baseballbbq.com and I would have bought them because they are incredible. Yeah, I did. I used my baseballbbq.com tools, my tongs for the pork, and it was easy to just get them right. I didn't even have to worry about them sticking. I used a little olive oil on the pork. But I tell you, the flavor was really nice. These pellets, this maple smoke, it gave them a really nice flavor. So I had to tell you that. Figured I might as well tell you on the show. Why waste it off air? I'm going to tell you on the air. Okay. So that's one.
I get no samples, but that's okay.
No. There was nothing left.
Oh.
Are you kidding me? So that's one thing. The other thing that I wanted to tell you, and you know I love things like this. I don't want to call it an oddity because that makes it sound like it's like in a sideshow at a carnival. But, you know, I'm a big Shohei Ohtani fan, yep, as everybody is. But I happen to see there is a pitcher who actually we became aware of 7 years ago in the Little League World Series. He was 12 years old in the Little League World Series, and he was a switch pitcher there. But he's now playing for, I think, Mississippi State. He's a sophomore. Yeah, Mississippi State. He throws 99 miles an hour from the right side, and then he tops out at 95 miles an hour from the left side. That's unbelievable.
And you know what that is? It's going to be two Tommy John surgeries on each arm.
For you.
Great talent, but you know what? That's going to, you know, it's going to happen.
Huh. Wait, can Jeff say it like this? Eeyore. Hey, Pooh.
Look, I hate to be a Debbie Downer.
Two Tommy Johns.
I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but look at all around baseball.
Okay, yes. Well, but wait a second. All right, hold on. Interesting. So he pitches, right? He's ambidextrous, throws hard both sides. From what I heard, nice, you know, good control from both sides. If he has Tommy John, and he doesn't have to have it at the same time. So, you know, like Shohei, he's had Tommy John surgery, right?
Yeah.
He's still playing this year for the Dodgers. He's pinch hitting. He's the DH for the Dodgers, having a great season. This guy, if he needs it on Tommy John on the right, he still could pitch on the left. Then he needs Tommy John on the left, he pitches with his right. So as long as he times the Tommy Johns okay, and they're not at the same time, but you think they're at the same time.
I just don't think it works that way, Len. Anyway, why don't we get to our guests?
All right. The first guest is Jeremy Wayland with Doug Scheiding as we talk all about barbecue.
This is Doug Scheiding, guest co-host of the Baseball and Barbecue show. And I am honored for the second time to give the intro to our guest tonight. I became aware of Jeremy Wayland through his captivating barbecue videos on Instagram. And when I asked my buddy, old boy, Chad Ward of Whiskey Bent Barbecue, he confirmed that I needed to meet him. Jeremy is a storyteller through the eyes of a video camera to capture memories, not just moments, whether it is an independent film, vision videos, weddings, or backyard barbecue. Jeremy has won several national cinematographer and production awards, which we'll get into. And he's turned his focus and camera to his new passion of barbecue, winning awards there too. To quote Jeremy, it's about togetherness, family, conversation, and love. And I say mouth-watering barbecue. So help me in welcoming Jeremy to the Baseball and Barbecue podcast.
Welcome, Jeremy. Wow, Doug, I cannot believe you are even better than the first time. You are so good.
I gotta ask something. I see some smoke coming behind you. It's coming from a barbecue. What are you cooking in there?
So we're gonna be reheating some shrimp. I made some shrimp and grits last night, and so all the extra shrimp we're gonna throw on here in a little bit. Do some like shrimp tacos or something. So I'm gonna be reheating some stuff on there a little bit later. So we might as well get it going now. You know,
you know, Jeremy, I thought, you know, you're a cinematographer. You're right. You do movies. I thought you were gonna be our first guest who actually has like moving visual effects, you know, with the barbecue. I mean, that's so perfect.
If I'm ever invited back, I will work on that. I'll up my production budget.
So Jeremy, before we got started, I was saying, and then that Doug told us about you. He said, Jeremy, you got to meet this guy, winner of Traeger Game Day 2023 College Football Edition. We'll get to that. And Doug, we thank you for bringing Jeremy on. Jeremy, thank you for joining us. And Jeff, why don't you start?
I'm going to defer to Doug.
Oh, good. All Look right. at that. Well, intro and he throws the first pitch.
Let's continue on. Let's continue
We're in
on
the big leagues now.
Absolutely. So I'll throw the first pitch. So I'll continue with what Lynn was saying in terms of that's how I really became aware of you is winning the college game day last fall and watching. I encourage everybody to go to your Instagram, the Camp West Barbecue, and watch the November 1st, 2023. I was feeling verklempt when I watched the video, feeling verklempt. So why don't you tell us about the UPS driver, Whistle Pig, and FedEx show?
And tell us about that. Yeah, that was really cool. You know, it's funny about the whistle pig. They'd been trying to deliver that package for like 3 days. And I would get, you know, I worked during the day. And so I would get the notification that they were trying to deliver something. And typically I have nothing of value, you know, delivered to my house. It's just Amazon, you know, toilet paper or something. So didn't think twice about it. And then they said they couldn't deliver. This is on Monday. And so I was like, what in the world? So I started to research, where is this from? And I think I found the state, and I started to put things together that this was something obviously more important. And so they come on Tuesday. I leave a note for the guy. I'm like, you know, please just put it somewhere. I promise it's okay. He doesn't do it. And so on Wednesday, this was the third day, the final day they're going to send this thing back. I patterned out his arrival at my house, and it was around the same time every day. So I was like, you know what? I'm taking an early lunch. I'm going home, and I will be there for this guy to figure out what it was. Cause I honestly, in the whole excitement of everything, I forgot the whistle pig was going to send me something. So I didn't really know what it was. So I race home, and I'm just waiting and, you know, bated breath, you know. And so he comes and he delivers it. And as he's delivering it, I do the video, the whole thing was, it was so cool, you know, receiving that, all the gift cards and everything. Get ready to go back to work. And as I'm heading out the door, I get a notification from FedEx and said FedEx Freight. And they said, you know, we are one stop away with your delivery. I'm like, well, I can't go to work now. So I end up staying, and that's when they ended up delivering the Timberline literally 40 minutes later. And so I text my boss. I was like, I'm going to owe you one because I can't come in right now. And yeah, they delivered that Timberline, and it was such a cool experience. It was way more than I expected. You know, I figured you win something, they're just going to give you the base of what it is, but they didn't. They went all out. They include actually the shirt and the hat I'm wearing right now, that was included, pellets, rubs, sauces, all the accessories. And so it was like, it was a whole, you know, it was like Christmas. It really was.
Well, tell us what you did to win that in terms of the video and the contest. Yeah. So
explain
the contest a little bit.
Absolutely. So we'll back up to September, and Traeger announced their college game day sweepstakes. And it was a month long game or, you know, social media experience contest. Thank you. That every week they would announce a new category, and they'd announce the category on Thursday. And then you had until Sunday at midnight to make your version of that category. So each week you could win a little something. Like the first week, they were giving out like 1,000 packs of stickers. Second week was these really nice magnets, like 500 of those. Week three was 250 flags. And then week four, there were 25 nice engraved meter probes. And then if you enter all 4 weeks, you are entered into their grand prize, which is the Timberline XL, $1,000 from Whistle Pig, and then a home gate party from the man, Chad Ward himself. And so I was excited about the entire thing, but it was that home gate party that I think kept me coming back for more. I was so excited. As you get to know, I'm a big community person, family and friends, and I love having people over. And so just the thought of this big Traeger sponsored party with all my friends, that was enough to just keep me going. And so week one was chicken, and I dove in head first. I bought a bunch of chicken wings, and I thought, well, I could do one, but since I have so many more, you know, chicken thighs, let me just do a whole bunch. And so I did like 3 or 4 different videos, different recipes and everything. And it just kind of continued from there. Week two was dips. And so do your best game day dip. And so on Thursday, kind of, this was my routine for the whole month. On Thursday, they would announce it, and I would just start doing my research all day. You know, what can I do? What sounds good? What's a little unique? What's, you know, so on week two is interesting because that weekend was my son's 8th birthday. Oh. So not only was I doing stuff, content for the game day party, we had 30 people coming over for his 8th birthday party. And I was doing a whole spread. Pulled pork, big beans, off the cob elote. And so I incorporated some of the dips. So that weekend was nuts because I was just filming for everything. I filmed it all and it got some great content out of it. And then week three was probably one of my favorites. And that was the whistle pig aspect of it. They said your best game day cocktail. And I, right when they announced it, I have a dear friend of mine. His name is Jason Bramham. He is an absolute artist when it comes to craft cocktails. And we've been friends for 20 plus years. And he was the first person I thought of. I said, let's collaborate. He's also, you know, big, you know, smoker fan cocktail. We'll get together and just have a, you know, great time smoking and eating and drinking and, you know, the whole thing. And so, connected with him, and we happened to have that Friday off. So we spent 7 hours together. seven very difficult hours creating cocktails and smoking fruits and things. And so we came up with some awesome ones. We did, he's very into tiki cocktails. So we tried to, we use that kind of as a base. And one of my favorite ones was a Brazilian cachaça. Pretty sure I say that right. But it's a Brazilian rum style drink. And we smoked pineapple that was rolled in like cinnamon and sugar. Mm-hmm. And normally that's done hot and fast over some, you know, so it's really charred. But we ended up smoking it for a couple hours, low and slow. And it just incorporated this just beautiful smoke flavor with the sweetness. And the drink itself, the video is in there. And the reaction I have was the pure reaction of tasting this was just euphoria. A fantastic drink. And so that whole thing, we did like 7 hours, I think five different drinks. And I pieced those videos out through the day. And you know, what's funny is that was the 1 week that I did not win the weekly prize. I won something in week one, week two, week three, didn't win anything. And so I was like, oh man, this is, now we're getting really tough. But I gained. Yeah, I stayed motivated for week four. And then week four, they announced big meats. And I was thinking, man, what can I do that's different? Everyone can go get a brisket. Everyone can go get ribs. You know, I thought maybe I'll do like a crown roast or something a little unique. It's like, everyone can do all that stuff. Maybe I should do it all. And when I had that thought, I was like, well, if I do it all, I'm going to need a lot of people over. I was like, well, if I need a lot of people over, that's the whole idea of the Traegerhood, right? That's the community, is the bringing people over. That's why I love barbecue, probably why a lot of us love barbecue, is the people coming over. So I said, let's do it. So I talked to my wife. We put it out on Facebook, open invite. Now, this was on Friday, open invite for people to come over on Saturday at like 5 o'clock. And we got just an awesome cross-section of our family and friends. All different groups came together. It was just so, that in itself was really neat. And I went probably bit off more than I can chew with my menu. Did brisket, ribs, pulled pork, chicken wings. And then I did things with those. So we had some brisket, tater tot nachos. I did pulled pork, mac and cheese balls that were deep fried. It was just way too much. But we pulled it off. My wife helped. My parents came over early and we did the whole thing. So it was just, that in itself was just awesome challenge and so much fun to do. And then, yeah, that ended up winning me the grand prize.
Nice. Nice. We're going to turn around now. We're going to just, I want to look at your regular job, or maybe it's soon to be not your regular job. I don't know, but you are a cinematographer. And I just want to tell everybody, they should go to Wayland Films. That's Wayland films.com. And there is a part that says about Jeremy. And it's very funny because I start reading and it says his story and it talks about you when you were, I think, 7 years old.
7 years old. Yeah.
And you were camping and you made a friend and I'm reading and your friend's name is Casey. And it turns out that Casey was a girl that was not going to be there that long, but you became very close with her. As I'm reading, my thinking is we're going to find out that later on, years later, because it said this would change his life, years later, you met Casey, and somehow you're with Casey now. But it wasn't that way. It was.
Well, yeah. You know, it's funny, though. I married a Casey. So my wife's name is Casey, but it's not the same Casey.
Yeah. That's
Casey about that.
Cross reference, not her, but I did marry Casey.
But that's good. And your mom did video of you at various places, and it started you on the path to becoming a cinematographer. You've won an Emmy. Take us down that path, and then tell us when you're going to do a movie about our podcast.
It's in the works. I'm typing right now. You know, it's so funny, and I love that story. It took me many years to really kind of piece everything together where it started for me. And yeah, lo and behold, that RCA VHS camera that we had in like 1990 would forever change the course of my life. But even more interesting is the fact that all of that, the cinematography, the waylandfilms.com, that's all actually hobby number two behind barbecue. My day job, I'm actually a first responder. And so I have had the opportunity to weave. Well, let me back up. When that started, that became a passion of mine. You could not get a camera out of my hands. And I continued this all through elementary school, middle school, and into high school and into college. And in college, I was taking every, you know, video television production course that I could. And I had the opportunity to get on as a production assistant with a film that was being shot in Sacramento, all LA based, but they were up in Sacramento working on this independent feature length film. And that kind of opened the door for me, meeting some great people. And fun fact, I was actually working at Starbucks at the time. So I would do the closing shift at Starbucks. And this is where I made friends with all the producers. All the pastries that were left over at the end of the night, I'd bag up, I'd take with me to the production the next day. And I was all their best friend at that point. But I was just a production assistant, which is just the, you know, hands on set to do whatever's needed to do, trash and all that stuff. Quickly moved into the production office where I was an assistant production coordinator. And that was more kind of hands on with, you know, helping secure contracts for locations or research things, a little, you know, working more with the producers. And I even every day I'd do a coffee reading for them and they say, hey, what do I need today? I say, you know, you really need an ice grande caramel macchiato with maybe like two pumps of vanilla, and nail it every time. So we had a lot of fun there. That opened the door to a couple opportunities down in LA. And when I was down there, I was early 20s at the time. And this was another kind of life changing moment for me because I was really headed down the path that I thought I wanted for my entire life. And I looked around at all the people that I was working with. Now, again, I was still the bottom of the barrel, the production assistant, just the entry level. And so I was of no importance down there, you know, in the grand scheme of things, but it got me in. I saw all the people that were in different various roles, you know, up the ladder. And they all, and at the time, you know, early 20s, I looked at these guys that were in their 40s. And I go, man, they're so old. Now here I am in my 40s. And I regret ever saying that. But I remember seeing these guys, you know, this is what they've done. They're working 6 days a week, 18-hour days. Every gig is, you're kind of a contractor. So your next one's not guaranteed. And you really have to have a personality for that. And I have some great friends that went that route and they're so successful. But my personality just didn't fit that. And it wasn't kind of what I had always dreamt it was. So I came back home and kind of reevaluated what I wanted to do. And that's when I went the route of a first responder. I've been doing that for about 16 years now. But the really cool thing is I've been being able to intertwine all those things into what I'm doing. And so instead of one of many in LA doing a lot of things, my story is I'm of many, I'm one that does something really unique. And that opened the door for the opportunity to win the Emmy was actually through a work project that I wanted to do. And I took this poem that was written and transcribed it into a short film that had a message behind it, you know, ended up submitting and winning and got to build a team. It just really cool thing. So it was a different path, but I'm very thankful for that because it keeps reoccurring. I might not be in the film industry, but I'm using these God-given talents for something that to me is so meaningful. And I'm happy for that. That was a long-winded way to say it's been a part of my life for a long time.
I didn't know that.
Right, yeah, I don't talk about that much, you know, specifically about what I do. But in my role as a first responder, I'm in the supervision level. And so when I, again, this is kind of how I started doing barbecue, how I did. It was for the people in my office. It was, you know, after COVID was very difficult for many first responders. And in the position I was in, I was able to offer just food as, you know, something to bring troops together and all that. And so that has been something so meaningful, being able to give to those that are working. So especially the younger guys and women that are, you know, working the streets and doing all that, just to say, hey, we care. We see you at all levels, not just, you know, the public, but, you know, management, supervision, like we appreciate everything that's going on. And that's something that's so important to me. So you'll see a little bit of that in what I do and why I do it is I know what it's like to work on weekends. And I've been very fortunate in my path. I haven't had it nearly as hard as many have, just because I have a lot of abilities that allow me to do more administrative things, to tell stories and things. And so, but you know, you're losing your weekends and your holidays and all that, I've experienced all that. So I know what it's like. So to be able to give someone some, you know, ribs and brisket and some mac and cheese and go, hey, thank you for working on Super Bowl, you know, while I'm at home with my family, that means a whole lot.
And definitely, and we do thank you and your team for everything you do. You know, before we started talking, you said you weren't much of a baseball guy. But a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. you got a package, and you got a nice baseball bat there. The Hall of Flame.
I couldn't set up for this and not have this right by my side so I could show you guys this. But yes, I was actually, I one of your podcasts I was listening to, and I know you all talked about it, so I wanted to make sure that I had it. But absolutely beautiful.
That is beautifully beautiful.
Done. There at the end, I don't know if it'll focus in on it, but it's got this great, you know, Traeger medallion there at the end, the whole thing. So this is really cool. I told the marketing team at Traeger, I'm going to find my way to Salt Lake City. I want all of them to sign this, just for the experience I've had with them over the last year. It's been so awesome. So that's very meaningful. And I want old boy to sign it. And Doug, I'm going to meet you one day. I want you to sign it.
Well, Doug signing it will make it much more valuable.
Yeah, right.
100%. Don't let us sign it. It'll go down in value.
Did you know that was coming? Or because it looked like on your video on Instagram that you were very surprised.
No clue. Yeah, no clue. What was it? I think I had seen one of their big Benny Kendrick Barbecue. I think he had posted, about the bat, a couple of days before or something. I was like, oh man, that's really cool. And then when I got a random FedEx notification of something coming from Traeger, I wasn't expecting anything. And it said, like, I don't know, it was like 3 pounds, 2 pounds, something fairly light. No idea. But when I got the Nest door cam. And so when they delivered it and I saw this long box, and as he kind of panned around to bring it in, I saw the Louisville Slugger on the side, and I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Uh-huh. And it totally blew my expectations out of the water as far as how nice this bat is. But I'm very fortunate to get one.
And now Traeger makes pellets out of the Louisville Slugger bat. So
they sent me a bag of those. I got to play around with that, and that was I don't know if you guys have seen the bags itself. I mean, the pellets are great. The bag is just beautifully done. I love the
it is beautiful
how it's designed. It's so nice. So, and the pellets were great. I did, gosh, what did I do with them? I think some pork, no, some ribs, some caramel corn, all sorts of different things with it. And they've been really cool.
Yeah, I did. We received some of those bags. I made salmon. It was,
That'd be really nice.
Yeah, it was real. I love making salmon in there because it's just so simple. Not to do any kind of commercial, but it really is. And
absolutely. That's what I love about it. It's just the ease and the flavor is always it's fantastic.
Yeah. Let me ask you something. I just want to go back to your website a second, because it's waylandfilms.com. And on there you say something, and this is one of the roots of our show, actually. And that is that everyone has a story. And we say that all the time. Sometimes we have guests who are huge names and everybody knows them. And sometimes we have guests that they have, they're involved somehow with baseball or barbecue or perhaps both, but people don't know them as well. But the stories, sometimes you're amazed by the stories. Everyone has a story. So I saw that on your site and I just thought, We had that connection. So,
it took me many years, in the video business, there's just technology everywhere. There's flashy things, new cameras, new lights. And I got caught up in that for years. It took me a while to realize behind all of the technology, what's the purpose of what we're doing? And when you go to a movie, do you really care about what lighting package they used, or, was it film versus digital, those things? No, you're wrapped up in what that story is. And once that clicked for me, that the reason I'm doing this is because there are stories out there that need to be told. There's a million of us out there with cameras. I have mine. What am I going to do with it to be meaningful, have some kind of impact? And that's finding these stories. And that has become a true passion, is not just creating videos and things like that, but sharing some purpose behind things and reasoning and sharing those stories, whether it's mine or somebody else's. That stuff is just what really drives me.
Well, how did you get it? You surprised me with your answer a little bit ago in terms of that you've been barbecuing for a while. So, tell us a little bit about your evolution of your barbecuing.
Yes. Yeah, so I'll tell the story about how I got my first smoker. I grew up watching my dad barbecue. And that was just always, summer barbecues in the backyard. That was summer. As I got a little older, I was probably in college, my dad got into smoking first. And the first smoker he ever bought was the Smoky Mountain, Weber Smoky Mountain, which remember you guys were talking about the other way, the gateway entry
smoker. It's the gateway smoker. Yes.
I immediately identified with that.
Yes.
That was the gateway. So my dad purchased that. He was out there, and I don't know what my dad does, if he's just standing too close to the smokers or whatever it was. He would come into the house just reeking of smoke. Now, I mean, I was never offended by it, but my mom just could not stand it. And she said, listen, you smell way too much like smoke. Like, you need to either get rid of this thing or go somewhere else. So like a smart man, he got rid of the smoker. And that was the one I got. And a little bit later, he picked up another smoker, which was a propane smoker. Same thing. Did it, reeking of smoke. My wife, my mom said, nope, no smokers. Get it out of here. That one's gone. My buddy got that one. Then he got an electric smoker. So it just went on for a while. I got the first smoker, and then some of my close friends got all of his other smokers. Today, he has a Traeger, and there's been no issue since. And he's actually, as big of a fan as Traeger I am, he just picked up a Weber kettle. And so that's been his thing right now, and my mom's been happy with that. So they're in a nice homeostasis right now with the smoking and marriage and all that. But so that was where I got my first one. And, you know, I played around with things. I remember the first rack of ribs I did, you know, my early 20s. I did them because a buddy of mine had a recipe for this cherry barbecue sauce. Ooh. So we spent all day, you know, making the sauce and all this stuff. I had no idea how to do ribs. I thought it was like doing a tri-tip. I was like, I'll just throw it on hot and fast and, you know, we'll just make it. And so I just butchered these ribs. But his sauce tasted so amazing. We ate it all anyway. So over the years, that's just been kind of my thing is, you know, learning and growing. And then it was when I bought my first Traeger was because, you know, I became a dad, just got so busy. I just stopped using my Weber because it was just time consuming. And I loved it. I love the process of it still of, you know, like stick burners or the charcoal, you know, you're there, you're babying it, you're working on it. This is a true labor of love, you know, making it happen. But with kids, I just didn't have time for it. And so when I got my first Traeger, which is behind you here, that reinvigorated it because it was easy for me to use. It allowed me to focus on family. It allowed me to focus a little bit more on, you know, bigger cooks and things that I wouldn't have done before. And so that's where I started my love for Traeger. This was in 2017. And it wasn't until 23 that I really found the community. And since then the passion has taken off, the inspiration of all that stuff.
Oh, let me ask you, taking out ribs and brisket and chicken, what is something unusual that you've made on the Traeger?
Oh man. We did a lamb leg a couple Easters ago. And that was really good. My father-in-law, so I married into an amazing family from the South, and they love to cook just as much as I do. And he's a big hunter and fisherman, the whole thing. And so he's brought in some pheasant and some duck. We've done that on the Traeger, but the lamb leg, I mean, he didn't hunt the lamb, but you know, he found it, got it somewhere and brought it over for Easter. And so we smoked that. That was really good. But I would say that's probably the most different thing I've done on the Traeger.
You know, we have a tendency on this show, Jeff, we did it on another episode where we gave the company their advertising slogan, and we're still waiting for reimbursement on that. People from Traeger are going to listen to this. I just thought, Traeger, we help you to focus on family, on friends, on whatever you need to do. I mean, yep. I don't know. I'm feeling
that's
good.
I'm feeling it. That's all part of the Traeger head. That's all part, you know, of the Traeger head.
All right. Where's my... All right. I'm waiting. All right.
It's in the mail. I know it.
Well, I'll get a package. Right. And for anyone who doesn't know what I'm referring to, Jeremy, you're going to have to tell them where to find this. Jeremy opens a box. There's a bag inside. And... this is one of those things that could also become like whatever, you know, how they become viral. And Jeremy says, what's in the bag?
What's in the bag?
What's in the bag?
Yeah, thankfully it's something very good.
Jeremy, yeah. Where could they find that video and what was in that bag? Well, you actually told what was in the bag, I guess.
I did. Yeah, I shared. So on Instagram, you'll have to scroll back a little bit. But it is after I won the Traeger game day, Whistle Pig Whiskey sent me a package. And it, you know, as we were talking earlier, it took me 3 days to finally intercept the UPS driver to obtain this package. And when I did, I was like, you know what? I got to record this. I honestly, genuinely no idea what is in it. Set up the camera, get everything going. And as I open the box, there's this gorgeous bag, and I've got it in here, Whistle Pig whiskey on it and all that stuff. And then in the bag was an envelope, and I open up the envelope, and there were four $250 gift cards addressed to me. So that was part of the grand prize winnings from Traeger Game Day. So we used all that for the Homegate party with Chad to purchase, you know, alcohol, rental stuff. I mean, it helped really elevate that party, which was nice. Oh man, it was so much fun.
And you're a coffee enthusiast, I say.
Yeah. So I spent many good years working at Starbucks, and actually went through, please don't quiz me because this is probably 20 years ago, but went through the Coffee Master program, where you get the black apron, which is a pretty cool honor. And you to earn that, there's all sorts of training you have to do and tests. You have to do a coffee seminar for your district supervisor or district manager. So I conducted my own coffee seminar there at the store. So that was really neat. And we're still very much coffee enthusiasts. Honestly, I don't go to Starbucks as much anymore. We just brew stuff at home, and I've got a lot of great companies I'll order coffee from and all that stuff. But with three kids, coffee is a very important part of our life. And bourbon too. But keeps us all going.
Doug, I have one more before I just have to get this in.
I'll do it.
Jeremy, I saw on the site, it had who you'd cook a meal for, and it was dead or alive. You'd cook a meal for your dad and grandpa together. Thought that was very, very special.
So I never had a chance to meet my grandfather. He passed away many, many years before I was born. And when I was asked that question, I started thinking about all the big names I'd love to do and all that stuff. And I'm like, what would be most meaningful? And if I was able to have my dad, who I talk to every day, and my grandfather, who I've never met, I couldn't imagine a moment that I'd want more than that. So yeah, that would be it for me for sure. I don't know what I would cook, but it would be something.
That's awesome. So speaking of other moments, one I really love, I guess it's when you won the Emmy, or one of the Emmys that you won, and your daughter is with you on the podium. Yes. And yeah, explain a little bit about that, winning that award and that moment. Cause that
absolutely. So she played a very important role in that short film. And if you have the chance to see it, I can send you the link so you can check it out. It's a 4-minute short story about a trooper, a state trooper, who recounts, he's retired, he's at home alone on Christmas Eve, and he's recounting all the events of things that happened on Christmas Eve. And one of these stories involves this little girl who he responded to their house because there was a fatal traffic collision, and he learns that the mom had passed away in the crash. Dad was not in the picture. He was long gone. And so he takes this little girl in and all this stuff. So about 4 years old. The poem itself is absolutely touching. When I watched the film that we did, because it's my daughter, it's not a dry eye in the house when we watch it. But as the poem described the little girl, my daughter just happened to be like fit that picture, the age and the whole thing. And so we used her in the film. And she was like 4 years old at the time. She did an amazing job. Very thankful. My mom is, she's got her doctorate in child growth and development. She's devoted her life to kids and all that stuff. And so she came out the day that we were filming with Harper, and this was in November, and it was 50 something degrees out, and she had to wear just this little t-shirt. She was so cold. We were filming in this mobile home, and my mom was able to paint this picture for her that helped her get into a character to play. It was just such a cool, putting all the pieces of my life together to create this. So anyway, she played a very important role. And so when she was up there on stage with me accepting the Emmy, those pictures are, I cherish. I have actually one in my office blown up because it's just so special. And she almost didn't get to come, but thankfully, logistically, we worked some things out. My parents were in Alaska, and they flew in to help take her because we had commitments throughout the whole day. And so she couldn't have been with us the whole time. So my mom was actually able to fly in so she could escort her to the Emmys just for that portion, and then take her. And I'm so thankful that all worked out, because I so cool. I mean, such a cool memory.
That is awesome. You know, I'm looking on your Instagram page, and I see what happened
what is it, last December, I think it was. Yeah, December, you get a knife in the mail, and you're opening it up, looks like a really cool tool there. But I'm looking at the rubs on there, and I'm noticing Big Unk.
Well, yes.
Well, tell us about Big Unk, because that sounds very unusual.
The Big Unk is now a dear friend of mine out of the Bay Area, and he's got a whole lineup of rubs. He was one of the first people when I kind of dived into the Instagram community and started building friends. His name is Nick, and he really just kind of welcomed me in, and so positive and supportive, and just such a great influence as far as me just kind of navigating, you know, friendships and learning how to do social media and something completely. I've done video production for decades, but this whole social media is just fairly new to me as far as producing content. So just when I post something, he was always just supportive and, you know, making me feel like what I'm doing is meaningful. So we became friends, and he's got a whole lineup of fantastic, you know, small batch rubs, everything from all purpose stuff to a Cali Cajun I used in my shrimp and grits yesterday to a beef rub, a pork rub, chicken, like he's got a whole thing. And so he was one of the first people that asked me to kind of become one of his nephews, which is, you know, an ambassador for his brand. And so I've got all of his rubs, and I love incorporating them into everything I'm doing. And they're all just fantastic. And he's a solid guy. I love supporting him and his family. He has events at his house. He opens the doors to a lot of us in the community to come in and cook and do things together. And that's, you know, something really special. So he's a good dude.
Yeah, actually, I was texting him today, talking about him being on the show, and I mentioned to him that we have the common thing, because I saw you on his website. Mm-hmm. I said that you were coming on, and he said, "What a champ. Love that guy." So I guess you guys have that mutual connection.
Thank you, Nick. Yeah, he's a good dude. Good guy.
All right. Doug, I want to just ask, actually, I want to turn this around a little bit. Jeremy, we're going to ask Jeff and Doug this, because I happen to see on that same website that you have some go-to road trip snacks. Now, I don't know if these have changed, but on the website it said sunflower seeds, Pringles, Sour Patch Kids, and iced coffee. And I want to ask Jeff and Doug theirs, but Jeremy, are those still your go-to road trip snacks?
Yeah, we just drove down to LA a couple of weeks ago, and on the way back, that is exactly what I got. So, yep, still stands true.
All right, so Doug, give us a couple of your go-to road trip snacks.
Road trip snacks. Wow. I would have to say it would have to be, this is going to sound kind of lame because I don't eat many snacks, but we have plenty of flavored water, and my wife likes to have sunflower seeds, and then I will actually have some chips, and then when we go to the wine country, we always pack a lot of cheese and a lot of crackers.
I want to be on that road trip.
Okay. Yes, yes.
Take me there.
All right. Now, inquiring minds want to know, Jeff, we always want to learn more about the OC. What are your go-to road trip snacks?
Well, that depends. I'm with the wife. It's going to be carrots and hummus, something healthy. But I'm with the boys. It's going to be pretzels and potato chips. And I do like the flavored water, Doug. So that's my go-to. So it depends.
Very good. Okay. So I'm glad we got that. You know, that was controversial, pressing. All right, Doug, we have appreciated Jeremy's time. And I leave it to you to wrap it up.
Okay.
Coming out of the bullpen.
Out of the bullpen. So
ask whatever you want.
A quick change up, and then I'll get to my last question. But all right. So San Francisco or LA Dodgers?
Talk about controversial. So I live in Sacramento. Yes. I've seen
the A's
or Giants games. However, my LA family are very enthusiastic Dodgers fans. So I got to play Switzerland here. I got to go somewhere in the middle.
Well, come on.
The Oakland A's are moving to Sacramento.
We don't.
That's very true.
Yeah. Jeff's right. We don't, but we don't go middle on this show. Come on,
it can be AAA.
Make a decision.
Maybe Sacramento has.
All right, I gotta go. I gotta go Bay Area. I'll go to the Giants. I gotta go.
Ooh, your family's gonna be pissed.
Thankfully, I cook for them, so they can't be too mad at me. But
yeah, food always makes them happy. So, but well, thank you so much. I'm gonna fast forward to the Super Bowl game day. And had an unbelievable video of you cooking for the MVPs. Me not knowing you're a first responder, it makes a lot of sense. And you had people, and you know, I looked at it, I'm like, geez, there's the winner. And then even, you know, Josh Hunt of Gridlin, you know, he's like, okay, you win. and you, like me, you got a finalist championship ring, but you did not win. And do you remember what you told me? When I asked you about that, you said, do you remember what you told? If not,
I can't remember. I could probably remember the idea of what I wanted to express, but I can't remember what I said.
This told me all I need to know about you. You said, and this is the best I can remember, you were glad you didn't win as you won it once, and it was someone else's time to win.
Yes.
Wow.
That was
so awesome. So awesome.
I wanted to go as big as I could for the brand and for just the game itself to inspire other people to do stuff. I did not want to win, and I wasn't sure how to express that to Traeger without like sounding like I thought I was going to win. But I was praying. I wanted to go as big as I could, but I didn't. A ring would have been cool. And I was I'm very thankful to win one. But no. Winning this guy back here, that's once in a lifetime. I don't need to do that, and I'm really thankful for you know, the guy that ended up winning the package. So cool going to Traeger headquarters. I mean, that's going to be an epic prize in itself. But yeah, it's way too awesome to try to take all the glory and all the prizes. So it was fun though. It was a fun day. I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
I appreciate you letting the rest of us win every now and then too, with getting your experience and with videography. So yes.
No, absolutely. So. And I love, you know, I get messages all the time. And how do you get your stuff to look like that? And you know, what are you shooting on and all that stuff? I film, it's just with my iPhone. When I got into the social media world, you're just going in with level as the playing field as I can, as far as equipment goes. I got experience that comes with it, but I do everything on my phone. Maximizes the time I get to spend with my family, because I'm editing at the end of the night when the kids are just, you know, on their iPads relaxing, whatever it is. I'm doing all my videos, and I love answering those questions on how people can make their stuff look better, because there's amazing cooks that might not have the background in video and photos. And so if my little contribution to this community is that other side of it, and to help lift people up on the visuals, well, I'm all about that. I'll do that all day long. So happy to answer questions any day of the week on how to make your content look better.
Well, I'll be asking you a few questions. Why don't you tell people what your socials are and how they can get a hold of you?
Yeah, so everything is Camp West BBQ on Instagram, TikTok. Same with YouTube. It's all Camp West BBQ. And then I just activated my Facebook page today, so I'll start doing some stuff on there. But that again, Camp West BBQ across all channels.
What is the Camp West?
So that actually stems from, I'm a big camping fan, RVs, travel trailers. That's another story about when I was a kid being infatuated with RVs. But we got our first RV travel trailer, Coleman 26 foot, January of 2020. And I booked out the whole summer full of trips and everything and all that stuff. When it all got shut down, we ruined all of our plans, but we, you know, triumphed and found other ways to experience it. So that camping has been a huge part of our life. And so I started actually Camp West as just documenting our RV travels. And when I started doing the barbecue side of it, I was like, you know what? One of the things I love most about camping is being outside. I set up an incredibly obnoxious outdoor kitchen with my Blackstones, my Traegers, the whole thing. I bring it all with me, all my rubs. That's what I love doing, is sitting around having the campfire going, the kids riding their bikes, being out in nature and cooking. That is my happy place. When I'm in the backyard, I'm experiencing that here too. So the Camp West is just my kind of ode to camping out on the West, being outside, whether it's with family, whether it's with food. You can probably hear in the background now, my kids just got home and they're jumping on the trampoline. So that means it's time for me to start grilling. That's my happy spot. So Camp West, you know, maybe it'll be, you know, Camp USA one day, but right now I'm out on the West. So we'll see how that goes.
Perfect timing. Jeremy, it's very easy to do the intro. Well, to do it well, like Doug, not so easy, but it's always hard to say goodbye. You've been terrific. We hope that you'll come back and join us again. Because
yes.
Doug, we thank you for bringing Jeremy on, because this has been entertaining. Everyone has a story, and Jeremy, you have many. So
thank you for being on here. When I read your list of previous guests, I was like, are they sure they got the right Jeremy? So it is an absolute honor to be here to speak with you all. I've been listening to your podcast, and even though I don't know much about baseball, I'm learning and I'm enjoying all the episodes I've listening to. So I'm a huge fan. So Doug, thank you for, opening this, you know, for me too. So I thank you all very much for this time.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast. And if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Len. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
And thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Doug. That was a great interview, Len.
Yeah, that was. Really enjoyed Jeremy and Doug together. I want to call the show. I want to let everybody know what I thought of that interview. But Jeff, how would I get in touch with the show?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. Give us a call, 516-855-8214. You can email us. baseballandbbq@gmail.com. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page. You can leave a comment on our X @baseballandbbq. Instagram, baseball and barbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. Our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. Please rate, review, subscribe, follow. We're on all your podcast apps. We really appreciate it.
And you know what? We'd also appreciate if you'd go to baseballbbq.com. Just remember, grilling season is here.
You want your baseball bat handles.
Yeah, right. As you're grilling, you're going to pick that up. You know, we just had a guest on who played 16 seasons in the majors. I'm just teasing it. He'll be on eventually. We're going to release the episode. We told him, if you've got that baseball bat handle, Don't think you can hit a ball with it, but it is a real baseball bat handle. So you guys are going to love it. Go to baseballbbq.com. And Jeff, we have another guest that you called him the perfect guest.
Well, yeah, he's grilling with Rich, and he reports on the Washington Nationals.
So why don't we get right to it? It is Rich Wachtel.
Baseball and BBQ listeners, you know, we are always on the lookout for the perfect guest. Someone knowledgeable in both worlds. We've had a few, Howard Johnson and Steve Traxel, and we think we have found another perfect guest. He has an X account called Grilling with Rich. So you know that is barbecue, but he's also a writer for the Nats Report covering the Washington Nationals. We are happy to have with us on Baseball and BBQ. Welcome, Rich.
Welcome, Rich. Rich, calling you the perfect guest, which you certainly are, but there's a lot of pressure there. Don't feel pressure, okay?
I strive under pressure, guys. I strive.
Excellent, excellent. So being that you could talk baseball or barbecue, I can go either way here. But I'm going to let Jeff, when he gets to his questions, go with the baseball. I'm going to start with the barbecue. So you had grilling with Rich.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about grilling with Rich and how did it get started?
Yeah. So it was just something that when I moved to Washington, the DC area after college, dabbled in the barbecue food scene a little bit. And then when I moved to my townhouse with my wife, my mom bought me a Weber grill as a gift for myself. you know, everybody gets different, you know, everybody gets, when they get married, they get gifts for the wife and the home. Like, I got a grill for my parents, and I started to make, you know, grilled pizza, and my friends at work started to be interested in how I did it. So I started to write, and then it kind of like exploded from there. I got a chance to really meet some amazing people from all around the country. Got to go to some really great events, Memphis in May. I was at a Kingsford barbecue tournament competition, excuse me. I've been to so many barbecue places, I can't even count anymore. And, you know, I was also on the Travel Channel on American Grilled for a little as a competitor, even though I lost in the first round. But, you know, just kind of really enjoyed barbecue, writing about it, sharing my passion for it. And then, you know, that's kind of that's how Grilling with Rich kind of started.
You mentioned dabbled. You did a little more than dabbling.
I did a little more than dabbling, yeah.
You go to Memphis in May. You said you competed on the TV show. What's your preferred choice of cooker?
Ooh, it's hard. I love, I have a Backwood smoker. It's my favorite smoker. It's really burnt now. It actually caught on fire once. And true story, when my son was born, I got a Snake River Wagyu brisket. And I was exhausted and I fell asleep and it caught on fire in my backwoods and the fireman came. And I was more upset about the Wagyu steak and the Wagyu brisket than anything else. I think my backwoods is still my favorite thing to grill, to smoke on. I'm a little partial to my Weber grill because, you know, that's what I started with. And, you know, I still love it.
Which Weber is it you mentioned?
So I no longer have the original one, but I had a Spirit. It was pretty
okay.
But now I use the charcoal one nowadays when I do grill. I have this really great grill. One of my other favorites is the PK grill. It's kind of like an old fashioned style grill, charcoal all the way. That's my jam.
So you said you've been many barbecue restaurants, I guess, across America. I assume they've been in Kansas City.
I actually have never been to Kansas City. That's one place that I've never been to and had barbecue.
Did we shame him? Should we shame him, Jeff?
We were shamed and then we went. You meant the one Memphis, obviously, in Memphis in May. Any particular area that you enjoyed?
I'm trying to think of all my great barbecue. I mean, to be honest with you guys, like, there's just great barbecue all around the country. In the Carolinas, there's some really, really great barbecue places. I love pork. Don't tell my mom, my Jewish mom, about that. But, you know what? Like, any place that has good barbecue, I don't have like a favorite place anymore. Like, I just love the good food and the good eats.
And you know what goes with good food and good eats? It is baseball, obviously. Yeah, so,
Jeff is king of the segue.
You know, it's funny. At Nats Park, there's this barbecue place that I go to all the time. And it's like the perfect, you guys should like, we should go. Next time you guys come to DC, we'll go to the Nats Park and we'll have barbecue and baseball together.
Yep. Sounds like a plan.
I like it.
But you're from New York and you end up in Washington. Now you're writing about the Washington Nationals. How'd you get into that gig?
So when my barbecue blog kind of ended, and it was a little bit of a blessing because and a curse at the same time, I kind of got bored for a whole 5 minutes. And I've been watching the Nationals ever since I moved down to DC in 2005 when they started also. I went to games at RFK all the time. I saw some pretty bad baseball. And then I've seen the team, you know, reach the pinnacle back in 2019. And, after 2019, I was just like so elated and excited. And it's funny, at my job, people used to ask me, hey, Rich, like, what's going on with the team? Or like, you know, because I lived and worked in Washington, D.C., I would write them like an email every single day of like all the latest news, whatever. And then I'm like, holy mackerel, like this could be something that, you know, I could do for fun. That's how the Nats report started. We do a morning briefing every day during the season, right before the day starts. It hits everybody's inboxes. And it, you know, it's been really well received. It's really great read. You know, we've experimented with different types of formatting, but now I think that we have a good format. We have a good team behind me to help, you know, do some content writing. You know, we branched into the minor league system because it's just like really important for the Nationals nowadays. So yeah, so as I said, I took like a 5-minute break from barbecue and then went into baseball.
What's the fan base like for the Nationals? Is it, you know, sometimes you hear about, like you hear, it used to be, I don't know if they still are, like the Los Angeles Dodgers. It was always, they're very quiet fans and they'll leave after like the seventh inning or something.
Yeah.
So what are the National fans like?
I think Nationals fans have definitely developed over the years. I mean, obviously, you don't have like the long history as like a New York team that has been there for decades, or like the Dodgers. You know, obviously, with the Nationals being a relatively new team, I think that nowadays, I think there's definitely a fan base that's passionate about the team. You know, that goes to the games. You know, I want to dispel that little seventh inning rumor myth because it's because the Metro stops running in D.C. at a certain time. Mm-hmm. So everybody has to get home before the Metro leaves. So it's not because it's bad baseball or we're bored. It's because of we can thank the Metro for it. So, you know, I think 2019 was amazing. The amount of people that showed up to the World Series games, I went to two of the three at Nats Park. It was a amazing atmosphere. The parade was just incredible. Definitely one of the highlights of my life. I took my son and my family there to the parade, and it was just wall to wall people. I think nowadays it's kind of like we're really watching and waiting to see how the Nationals develop. You know, they're doing this reset or retooling, as Mike Rizzo likes to say all the time. So I think that fans are passionate, they're knowledgeable. Yeah, and they're also respectful. I mean, if you come to Nats Park, there was a time where ushers prevented people to go down to the seats during the actual inning. I actually missed that part. I think that's a very, I wish that more people would do that, wait until the half inning to switch or in between innings to switch. You know, it's a great vibe. I mean, it's a great vibe, great team, great city. We're passionate about our sports and we're also passionate about the Nationals.
Remind me, didn't in 2019 when they won the World Series, didn't the road team win every game?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I thought that was the point. And Steven Strasburg obviously was the MVP, and it's just too bad what happened to him. I mean, he could have been one of the all time greats, but
100%, yeah,
yeah. But you know, I've been looking around in that report, and it's very interesting. And I looking at the 2024 preseason prospect rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, as a Met fan, we want to know who we're coming up against, and it looks like I should be afraid of this guy named James Woods.
Yeah, you should, actually. He's really, really great. He's going to be a great addition to the team once he makes the majors, probably either this year, but definitely next year. And, you know, he is a great player, very well-rounded in the outfield. Definitely somebody to take a look at for the Nationals in the Nationals prospect system. Nats did get him from the Juan Soto trade.
Mm-hmm.
From the Padres system. So, you know, he was part of that blockbuster trade. So, yeah, I mean, the Nationals are very lucky to have him, really excited. I've seen him up close and personal play in the minor leagues, and he's just mm-hmm. He's just super tall and like lanky and like has that like LA De La Cruz kind of lankiness to it. And okay. It was just amazing to watch him in person. I can't wait to see how he further develops during the year.
Is he fast?
He's fast. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Richard, look, the Nationals are not an old team, but they are, they were the Montreal Expos. So mm-hmm. as a fan of the team, do the Nationals embrace and kind of, you know, do they honor the legacy Montreal Expos?
So, not really. You know, in 2019, they had like an they used the Expos jersey as an alternate jersey one time, throwback jersey. Otherwise, it's just very, you know, they don't really kind of like lean on that. I think that, you know, the Senators from the real olden days, I think, are really more where the Nationals kind of like lean into their history. And, you know, you now, instead of having, I mean, you see like obviously the curly W or the Walmart sign, but, you know, they've definitely leaned into the more straight W over the last couple of seasons with the capital in the background on some apparel. So I think that if you really had to choose, yeah, I think they kind of lean more into the Senators rather than the Expos. I mean, it's also kind of weird because at Nats Park, they do have a couple of in the Ring of Honor thing or the ring above home plate. They do have a couple of Expos, Gary Carter there. So it's just like a very, very interesting dynamic. Right. But to really answer your question, I think it's more the Senators rather than the Expos.
I've been to Washington Park, Nationals Park, a couple of times. And yeah, I do agree with you. As you walk in, at least when I go in the entrance, there's a couple of statues of Washington Senators and even the Negro League team name. Was it the Grays? Okay, yeah. Yes. So there was Frank Howard was there, I believe. But I'm there sure. definitely is statues and yeah. throwbacks to the old Washington Senators.
Oh, 100%. Yes.
Yeah. So, Richard, let's jump back into barbecue for a second. Okay. So what did you think about Memphis in May?
Honestly, it's been a long time since I went, but when I went, I was completely overwhelmed. I'll be kind of honest. Like, I really didn't know what to expect, you know. Definitely. I think it was my first barbecue contest that I went to, being that I was able to kind of like cover it for my website. At the time, I kind of got a behind the scenes look and spending a lot of time with like some of the great pitmasters and cooks from around the country. So it might have not been a traditional experience that a non-press person would get the opportunity to. But it was just a lot of fun and just a lot of culture and something completely different from what I grew up with. I'm originally from Long Island, so not a lot of type of culture in Long Island. But it was really great. I had so much fun. I wish at the time that I was more into baseball than I am now, because I would have hit the minor league team there and just kind of like had some maybe baseball and barbecue together. But
they go well together.
Yeah, they do go well together. I mean, I had so much fun. It was exhausting. I remember on the flight back to DC, just like sleeping the whole entire way home. Mm-hmm. It was just a great experience. Something that, you know, I still look back really fondly of.
And what TV show were you on? You mentioned before.
Yeah, so the Travel Channel did something called American Grilled. And basically, it was like a Chopped style competition. But instead of cooking in a kitchen, you were outside cooking on grills in different locations. And funny enough, I was in the Charlottesville episode, so not too far from DC. I drove down to Charlottesville for the episode, for the taping of that of the show, and that was just another experience. I think that you see a lot of that stuff on television and you don't realize how much work goes into it and how much time 30 minutes really isn't. I mean, it was legitimately 30 minutes, but it felt like five, two minutes. You know, it was a little bit cool. I remember when I got to the, you know, they tell you to come to it at a specific time in the morning, and I got there and they like mic you up and they have like this TV camera, a bunch of people around you, and like they're just like assigned to you to like, you know, film you and stuff like that when you're running back and forth. And it was just, to be honest with you, it was so surreal because I was like, you guys got stuck with like some poor schlub over here. I really, and I, it was just like, It was a great experience. I had so much fun. I kind of got the TV bug a little bit. Yeah, it was such a great experience. It's been out for a long time now, so I don't have to spoiler alert anybody. I did get booted in the first round, but you know, I think, you know, trying my best and having fun and just having that experience. Mm-hmm. Now I know you can't make mac and cheese within 30 minutes on a grill from scratch. But lesson learned, really expensive lesson learned, but I didn't want to go easy. I wanted to challenge myself, and I wanted to, you know, do something different. And maybe it was not a good idea, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Had fun.
You had fun. So, well, you know, it's a great idea to have fun. Why not?
Yeah, how much money, Richard, how much money would you have won if you won the competition?
You know what? Honestly, I don't remember, but it was definitely, I think it was $25,000. I mean,
Wow, that's expensive macaroni and cheese.
It's exactly expensive macaroni and cheese. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. But Uncle Sam would have taken some of that anyway, so it wasn't really.
Yeah.
So I've been looking around your blog. Is it called a blog now? It's the website, the natsreport.com.
It's a Substack. I don't know.
Okay.
A newsletter.
Well, you wrote an article back in December. After Shohei Ohtani signed, and it was to you're kind of saying, no, John Heyman, it's not okay. It's not great that he signed to a marquee franchise. And that was actually a very interesting article. If you want to, give us a quick synopsis for our listeners.
Yeah. And that kind of, I was reading the headlines, and I think John Heyman and Ken Rosenthal were talking about, you know, how awesome it is, you know, that the Dodgers were able to sign, and it's great for baseball, X, Y, and Z. And, you know, I think that it really wasn't. I really don't think that it is good for baseball. I think that, you know, as I read in the article, it's like the rich getting richer, and the poor teams or the small market teams aren't able to compete with, you know, the Dodgers or the Yankees in that sense or the Mets. And I think that it does, you know, really disservice to the sport. I think that if you look at the way the NFL is set up, you have an equal opportunity. I mean, I'm a big advocate for a salary cap in baseball. I think the notion that players still can't make money is kind of ridiculous. If you look at the amount of money that football players make within their sport and within the salary cap, it really equals the field, and it really gives teams I feel like with football, every single year you have a pretty good chance, unless you're the Commanders.
or the Jets.
The Giants. Yeah, exactly. To make it to the, you know, to make it far in the playoffs, and everybody, it resets every year, and you have to make it work. And, you know, it really helps the smaller markets. And, you know, DC is considered a smaller market team. So, you know, unfortunately, you know, there's the issue of Masson happening and the hamstringing the Nationals. Even though that's kind of been settled recently, but it's unfair, you know, like, you know, the market for Dodgers TV contract is going to be bigger no matter what than the Nationals TV contract is going to be at the end of the day. Right. And, I think that it would have been great for, you know, a Shohei Ohtani to go to like the Blue Jays to highlight the city of, you know, Toronto. And, you know, the baseball that's, you know, to grow the sport, not just in the cities that we know that the sport is kind of already growing.
You know, I actually did a rant on one of the shows. Jeff's really the good ranter, but I it was tongue in cheek. And, you know, finally, the Mets have a billionaire owner, and we're a large market team, and it always felt like, you know, they had the occasional signings, but you kind of thought if they made a big signing, that was it.
Yeah.
Now you don't feel that way. But we always were in the shadow of the, the pinstripes.
Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not like sympathetic at all to like billionaires, you know, they should be doling out the contracts, right? For to really.
Right.
Team
right.
Don't get me wrong on that. Mm-hmm. I think that it's a it's being irresponsible to fans if the owners don't pay for the players to better the team and for the experience for the fans that are going there. But I think that baseball as a whole should really look at how do you make it fair for small market teams to compete against a big market team? And I'm not saying that super teams. I mean, I personally think the Dodgers are going to flame out. I think there's too much superpower there. And I think the expectations for them are going to be off their charts. And
they'll implode.
Yeah. I mean, what's going to happen if Dave Roberts doesn't make it to the World Series, right? I feel like it's a World Series or bust with that type of thing. Team there. And I realize that at the end of the day, it's about performance, but at least you kind of have to make it, again, the NFL does a really good job to make it fair for everybody to really make it the team better.
Yeah. And with these, I hear what you're saying about the super teams, the Dodgers and the Yankees and all that, and they're going to expect to be in the playoffs every year, although the Yankees weren't last year, with this expanded playoff. And I think it's too expanded. I think it's just, you have an 84-win team going to the World Series this year. And last year, I think the Phillies had 87 wins or something. Mm-hmm. And all it takes is getting hot for a few days. And the Dodgers go down. The Braves go down. And mm-hmm. It just – once you get in the playoffs, anything can happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm actually in agreement with you. I think that the expanded playoffs is not also a bad idea. I mean, there's – I understand that – the need for the team, for the sport to grow and, to adapt and be faster paced. And to be honest with you, I wasn't a big fan of the pitch clock until I went to a game with my kids. And then I became a huge fan of the pitch clock because, it really does speed up the game. And, I actually now like it, but I think that we're moving too far away from what makes baseball great. Or what made baseball great back in, I'm just picking a time period, before the 90s or the early 2000s, where baseball was about strategy and, about left, the matchups, bringing in a righty versus a lefty, in the late innings, making sure that you have enough, the closer, all those type of strategy. I mean, having the pitcher hit, I kind of miss that, the mm-hmm. sacrifice bunts and stuff like that. I mean, there's no more, it's like home run, great, or a hit or a single. And then you're kind of stuck in between here. And I think that what makes baseball great or what made baseball great and unique to Americana was the strategy, was the slow pace, was a deliberate, decisions being made for reasons. I'm all for using analytics. I think that's a great way to grow the game, to grow with the times. But I think that, I would have rather seen a bigger push for Major League Baseball to embrace technologies and stuff like that, opposed to trying to edit the gameplay of the sport.
I was resistant to the pitch clock as well. And I told this to Len, I understand the need for the pitch clock, but if the batters stayed in the batter's box, there would be no need for the pitch clock because, I grew up in the 70s and 80s. Games were moving fast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's actually interesting. I'm not too sure how often you guys make it to a minor league game, but more recently, the minor leagues, the very fact that they installed a pitch clock in the minor leagues before it moved to the major leagues made the minor league games and the pitchers in the minor league pitch faster. And they made that kind of delivery faster. So when they hit the majors, it kind of had a ripple effect. And, again, that's a natural transition and a natural learning. And I think that's more, that makes the game great. And you didn't have to tinker the majors. You just kind of have to maybe fix it a little bit in the minors and just wait for it to
cascade. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You're keeping the batters in the batter's box in the minors instead of fixing their cup and their wristband and their armband and whatever else there is.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's get back to the 2024 Nationals. Is Dave Martinez on the hot seat?
No, because he just got a nice new contract. So okay. I don't think so. I think that the team, there's very kind of like low expectations again of what the team is going to look like. I don't think Dave Martinez is all at all on the hot seat.
Josiah Gray. I know when he pitches against the Mets, he hasn't had a lot of luck, but you can tell he's going to be a talented, talented player.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you look at the Nationals pitching staff and the players in general, there's just a lot of talent, raw talent with the team. It's just a matter of really developing and building that core around the team. I think going back to the prospects, you know, the team has made that strategic decision to sell Trey Turner and Max Scherzer to the Dodgers back in 2021. Yeah, 2021. Yeah, it's been a long time already. but like, you know, to make that shift. So you kind of have to wait for those players to kind of develop. Josiah Gray came over from the Dodgers and has developed really well. And he's a really good pitcher. And I think that he has the major league stuff. It's just a matter of kind of honing that skill. I mean, there's a lot of great prospects that have come up through the system. Cade Cavalli last year, unfortunately, had Tommy John, so he was out for a while. I mean, for the majority of the season, he's going to be back towards in June-ish. So it's going to be interesting to see how he develops. Jackson Rutledge, also a draft pick for the Nationals in 2019, just made his major league debut towards the end of the season this year. I mean, in 2023. So, you know, possibly seeing him at the major league level or just at AAA for a little bit until, you know, he gets another opportunity. There might be an injury or whatever for him to, you know, get pulled up to the majors again. There's just a lot of talent there. It's just a matter of seeing which players, you know, develop. There's also Mackenzie Gore, who, you know, also came over from the Juan Soto trade from the Padres. So he's definitely becoming one of the aces on the team. You know, the Nats have a really nice pitching rotation, a young staff, and it's going to be really interesting to watch. And that's why at the Nats Report, we're really like focused on the prospects, because, you know, the prospects are really what's been driving the team over the last 2 years. And then also, I think that in 2025, next season or in 2026, you're going to see a lot of interesting moves happening, hopefully during the offseason, where the Nats can kind of like add to their growing core young players.
Now, Richard, you mentioned the Nats Report. I want to tell everybody that they should go there because it's such a well-done website. It's thenatsreport.com, thenatsreport.com. What I wanted to know is, if I'm a fan of the Nationals, this is probably something I wake up in the morning and I look at. So do you find that you are like in where you want to scoop others? You try to get information first, and where is your information coming from?
Well, if I told you that, that wouldn't be fair.
You can't reveal your sources, right?
No, I mean, I think unfortunately, you know, in order to gain subscribers and all, you know, views and clicks and all that stuff, you have to be first on a couple on stories. So yes, that's definitely, you know, one of our goals at the Nats Report, but also it's just about education and keeping the fans informed. You know, when I first started the Nats Report morning briefing, it was just like an email with a bunch of links to other sites and other news articles about the Nats. So I try to keep that core still at the heart of the morning briefing, kind of giving the Nats fans that overall picture of what's going on with the team. But if you have a scoop, I would love to be able to.
Oh, you won't tell me anything, but if I have a scoop, okay, I see how it works. If I have a scoop, I'll let you know. All right,
you know where to get me.
I may have a barbecue scoop, but I don't know.
I love it, barbecue scoops.
So you're sharing the broadcast area, I guess, with the Baltimore Orioles and with Masson. How's the relationship there? I know at the beginning it wasn't too great, but now we're what, 20 years into it, they should get along?
Don't talk to me about that. It's definitely a sore spot. You know, You know, the Masson deal is just incredible, how it really has hampered the team in a, you know, long, and it just like, it's now getting rectified, and it's a little of a shame. I'm a very big advocate that, you know, Major League Baseball should have stepped in a long time ago and fixed this problem. They're the ones that kind of created it when the team kind of moved from Montreal down to DC area in order for the, you know, for the owners to, you know, buy into this, and especially the Orioles to buy into, you know, the them having another competition in the DC area, which, by the way, like, if you've ever been to the DC area, Baltimore is nowhere near Washington, DC. I mean, I think that's kind of ridiculous. I know, you know, some people in Montgomery County are, you know, Baltimore fans. I mean, I guess that makes sense a little bit, but, you know, if there's no, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. That's like being like, you know, competing with like Albany and then like New York City type of media. But
it's that far. Okay.
I mean, it's like, no, obviously it's not that far, but like it definitely like has that feeling to it.
Right.
A whole nother world in Baltimore. But, you know, I think that baseball really messed up on that. And I think that, you know, not having the Nats, not having that revenue coming to the team on a regular basis, it was tied up in litigation for a very long time. Peter Angelos and then Matt and the ownership of the Baltimore Orioles were very, they were not giving the team, the Nats, the money that that was legally theirs. So, you know, whether or not, I think that situation is kind of resolved, but, you know, it's unfortunate. It really, really, really is unfortunate that that's the situation, and that, that it had to get to a point where the team was, I mean, the Nats were getting millions of dollars in back money that they're owed. I mean, it's just, so it's unfair.
You know, I'm looking at the your shelves in back of you, and you got a nice little collection there of bobblehead dolls.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do. I actually have a Nats version of Richard, which I got as a Father's Day gift. Yeah, I love collecting. I find that so the really great part of baseball. Showing up to the park 2 hours early or 3 hours early and sweating in DC August heat, and to get a bobblehead. My wife thinks I'm crazy, but my son and I love doing it. It's one of my favorite things to do during the summer. Yeah, I have so many great memories with each bobblehead that I've gotten. This is my exclusive collection. I have another collection. Uh-huh. A basement from 2019 and before, but, you know, as I said, each bobble has a great story behind it, and I think that's what's great about baseball, right? You know, that tradition, sharing that passion with your family. My son and I go to baseball games all the time when he was growing up. My son is actually going to sleepaway camp for the first time this summer, so I'm kind of going to miss my baseball buddy. We'll see how I do there. but all kidding aside, like I've had such great memories at Nats Park with my family, my dog, my wife, my daughter, my extended family. So, you know, baseball is really at the core of, you know, myself, but also the core of America. I know a little corniness over here. Sorry.
I also like to collect bobbleheads, but getting at the Citi Field like 2-3 hours before the game, and now they used to have 25,000 to a guest, now it's 15. They cut it down. Mm-hmm. I can't understand it. It just means more people are going to be disappointed. Having said that, Len and I want to go to a game on May 11th because they're giving out a Mr. Met bobblehead doll in a London telephone booth.
That's actually kind of cool.
It is. However, we're invited to a wedding that day. And would you believe the groom, who was a friend's son, would not move the date?
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
Well, here's a little tip. There is this really great website called ebay.com that you can probably get help with. I've also found that there are really great people services here in BC. I don't know if people do this in New York, but people would actually wait in, you pay them to wait in line to get you the bobblehead and then bring it to your house. It's the greatest thing. I love America, right? If you could ever think of the most American thing to do is to have somebody else wait in line to get you a bobblehead and drop it off at your house, we've hit peak civilization.
Well, actually, Richard, we had, so the new bench coach is John Gibbons, okay. Gibby, and we had him on. He didn't have that job yet. We hit it off pretty well. So maybe he might be able to, if we ask him nicely, maybe he could, you know, he gets there early, I'm sure. Yeah. And he could maybe go to the box and take a couple for us.
You think that he has to take them out of the 25,000 that the team gives away, or do you think they probably have their own stash, right?
Yeah. Like, absolutely.
I think that would be now it's 24,998.
Do you guys have guaranteed giveaways like that ability at Citi Field?
I think if you're a season ticket holder, you get all the giveaways.
Oh, that's what you got to do then.
Yeah, well, that's that's a pretty penny.
And, it's a lot for a bobblehead.
Max Scherzer's contract, right?
Oh, yeah, right. I tell you what, one time I took my son on a road trip to Pittsburgh, and we didn't know, it just happened to be Josh Harrison bobblehead day. And as we were walking out, there's this guy buying the bobblehead that people did not want. And he had a couple hundred of them. And I'm sure they were going on eBay. So
I always, just another tip, I always, when there's like a bobblehead game at Nats Park, I always go to, you know, I spot the visiting fans that have the bobblehead. And I've done this a couple of times myself where I'll be like, oh, I'll buy you a beer if you give me your bobblehead. Always, like, that's always another great way to get some extra bobbleheads or giveaways is beer for giveaways.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're getting. I guess they've been creative for a while, but with the bobbleheads, like putting Mr. Met in a London phone booth. This season, I happened to go to the game, and Jeff benefited from this one. It was Mr. Met as Raiders of the Lost Ark. So he was, that
in the hat and with the rope.
My favorite bobblehead of Nat's time is Ryan Zimmerman as Captain America. So then I'll put a picture of this on my Twitter, on my X handle. But basically, it's a picture of Ryan Zimmerman with the shield with the big thing over there. It's like one of my favorite bobbleheads of all time. I mean, it's classic Nationals.
Yes.
Richard, were you happy when you guys won the World Series after Bryce Harper leaves?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to tell you guys a story. So I was actually in Germany for work when Bryce Harper signed with the Phillies. And I got the text and I was like, oh, Bryce Harper, that are so annoyed. For the whole entire 2019 season, whenever he visited Nats Park, and I used to back then I used to keep score at every home game that I went to, I would not write his name on the scorecard. So if you look at my 2019 book, and whenever the Phillies visited Nats Park and I was there, his name is not in my scorebook. I am so glad that we won right after. I'm glad that he hasn't won a World Series ring yet. I hope that he never does. And let me just tell you the reason why. This is a very valid point here, kind of going back to the authentic, to the, you know, being baseball, authentic to being baseball. The very fact that he kind of disrespected the Washington, D.C. fan base after he left really does not sit with me very well. I think that you can, you know, there was definitely a lot of interviews where he said, you know, the fans didn't want me here. I think there was an interview saying, you know, like, oh, I'm so glad, I wish I was drafted by the Phillies. There's, you know, I think you can be proud of the team that you're part of, but also have the respect of, you know, where the team that drafted you. I tell you that I can say that the fans wanted Bryce Harper here. They were very excited when he was here, when he won their home run derby here at Nats Park in 2018. I know a lot of people that had Bryce Harper jerseys and were excited. So I think that when you disrespect a fan base, and you know, you have to live with those consequences. So in my mind, I think that was very poor sportsmanship. I will not write his name on my scorebook, and I hope he never wins a World Series.
Well, he did say at his first press conference, you know, I'm really hoping to bring a World Series to Washington.
I mean, he did a great job. I mean, absolutely. I mean, it was great. Thanks. I'll thank Bryce Harper next time I see him.
Well, Richard, this would have been a great time with you. I mean, we really appreciate you coming on Baseball and BBQ. If you want to give us your social and your where anybody can read your work.
Yeah, everybody can just like look for us on we're all the Nats Report on all channels, X, Threads, Instagram, Facebook, and then also at www.thenatsreport.com. You can subscribe. We have a free version, and then we also have a paid tier version that goes to support the team that I work with on, you know, everything goes right back into promoting the site, or, and you know, we're not affiliated with the Nationals, so you don't have to feel like you're helping the Washington Nationals. You're helping a bunch of guys that are passionate about baseball. So, you know, definitely check us out, www.thenatsreport.com and at the Nats Report on all social channels.
Well, that's terrific. Thank you very much for being on Baseball and BBQ. We really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. I had a ball.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Rich. You know, he just, he likes to grill. So then he does something with grilling. And the Nats report, that Nats report is very good.
You know what? The Nationals are going to be good in a year or two. They were building something special there.
Yeah, they are. And so we thank Rich, and was great to hear all about the team that's going to beat our Mets.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, let's let everybody know that we are presented by Bet Online. It is where the game starts. Jeff, as much as we try to avoid it, there's many things you can't avoid. Taxes and the end of the show.
Yeah, well, but you know what? We'll be back for 237.
Yes, and looking forward to it. So until then, how do we end the show?
With the poet.
And that is Shel Krakowski.
And the musician.
Dave Dresser.
And the song.
Baseball always brings you home.
And we'll see you next week on episode 237.